principles that you've taught me, and I'm going to go drink and smoke pot like a gentleman. That's what they did. They laughed at me, those fuckers. They're like, we'll be here when you get back. And I was like, yeah, okay, fuck off. And so I went and intentionally chose a different direction of my life. And at that point, like, I was there for my child. I was there for, I kind of glossed over this, but had another child with the same woman at that time and period, 6 years apart, without like any kind of being in a relationship in between. It was a little bit strange, but as soon as I started using, like, it was like the first time all over again. My disease was just there waiting for me to fucking to relapse. And I didn't make a decision that I was going to be powerless for the next 4 years of my life. I made a decision that I was going to, you know, drink and smoke pot like a regular person. But what ended up happening is, like, once I started, I couldn't stop. And very quickly, I ended up homeless again. It's very difficult to be a parent when you're homeless. And I remember having a conversation with somebody, and I was telling them how I was a worthless piece of shit, because I came here with, like, a long track record of just hating myself thoroughly. And I remember having a conversation with somebody that knew I was a father, that knew my kids, and they were saying, like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, you know what? They don't, I don't deserve them. I can't be a father to these people. I am not capable. I am worthless. I had this conversation out loud, and then I immediately went and got high so I didn't have to feel those fucking feelings. At the end of a four-year relapse, after having been in Narcotics Anonymous for a while, having my using destroyed, I was like trying to, like, do, you know, finding the ways and means to get more. And I was telling people, well, I can't do that. That doesn't jive with my spiritual principles. Like, my perception was so fucking warped that I wasn't willing to go, like, break into cars because it was unspiritual. But, like, I didn't give a fuck. I just didn't want to go to prison, man. But, like, I was still telling myself that, like, that I was somehow principled. I was so caught up in the delusion of what I learned in Narcotics Anonymous that I was incapable of being honest with myself. I just didn't know. I didn't know that I was incapable of being honest with myself. I thought I was being honest. So at the end there, I went and checked myself into a mental ward because I couldn't tell the truth from the false anymore. I was hearing voices in my head. I was talking to people that weren't there. I went and checked myself into the mental ward. And because when I got clean, I didn't have a cell phone or pager. I only contacted my sponsor through the payphone, so I knew his phone number by heart. I still know it. I called him from the mental ward, and I said, hey, Kevin, I need help. I ended up staying. I went to a crisis house. I was there for a month. And then afterwards, he took me to a meeting, which happened to be my old home group, a Friday night men's meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in San Diego called Hulum Saban, which is like 90% convicts. It's a candlelight meeting. You can hear a pin drop, all these really hardcore motherfuckers that would just, like, come in and share a message in Narcotics Anonymous. And at the end of the meeting, I shared about how my name is Dan, I'm an addict. I used to come to this meeting. This is my home group. I have 2 days clean, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And I was surrounded by, like, 10 people, dude, who came up to me afterwards and just shared all the love, offered me a place to live, said I didn't have to pay rent, I could, like, stay there for some time until I got on my feet. And, like, the love and compassion and presence of these people who didn't care about what I was going to give them. They just wanted to be there to give to me what I needed at that time. Narcotics Anonymous showed up for me and saved my life. Because the love and compassion that I was showed in that moment was not anything that I had ever experienced. And I was so caught up in the shame and the guilt that I had on my way here, that, or like when I was out there, that I didn't think it was possible for me to deserve that kind of love and compassion when I came back. But everyone told me I did. And I believed them, because they told me that they felt the same way too when they got here. And that was January 26th of 2012, and I haven't had found a need to use since then. And I can tell you that today there's no situation or circumstance that can come up in my life that's going to make me use. The only thing that can make me use today is if I make conscious decisions to separate myself from the solution of my disease, which is Narcotics Anonymous. If I make those conscious decisions to separate myself from Narcotics Anonymous, I will use. Because left to my own devices, I cannot do this. I don't know how to live with or without drugs. Narcotics Anonymous teaches me how to live with and without drugs. And so, since I've been clean, I met my wife when I had 9 days clean. We didn't get together immediately. You know, chill out. There was no 13 step. I tried, and she had a boyfriend. I was like, fuck, I gotta sit in the waiting room for a while. Whatever. I got my kids back in my life. I got a job. I got promoted. I started being in service in Narcotics Anonymous. I was going to 4 meetings a day for a while. And, you know, as I got the job, as I got promoted, as I got the girlfriend, and those things happened, my attendance around here dwindled. I was still being in service. Sorry. I was still being in service, but my attendance in the meetings dwindled. And and we went through some tough times, man. We, you know, it was, like you said, I was grieving the use of drugs. I was grieving the fact that I had a crutch that could help me, like, forget the fact that I felt like I wasn't enough. And, like, so I was bare, and I needed to find the solution. The solution is, like, in step work, in being of service, in showing up to meetings on a regular basis, in developing a relationship with a power greater than myself. And I have those things today, and but the path to where I am today from where I was when I got clean has not been a linear, you know, climb up a hill. It has been up and down and around in circles, and, like, there were times we got married. I was, in 2016, I was, like, 4.5 years clean, 6.5 years clean. Like, we were nearly bankrupt. We were making decisions on a monthly basis as to whether or not we were going to pay rent or we were going to, you know, have dinner. And that's not, like, what I thought I was signing up for when I got clean. Like, I thought I was signing up for a new way to live. And but there's no situations or circumstances that can make me use today. And there's always a solution in Narcotics Anonymous. And as long as I'm willing to open up, be honest, and hear the solution, and then be willing to take action to get into the solution. Fast forward a little bit, like, that whole kind of process of me, like, you know, I was working like 80 hours a week. I was going to, like, a meeting a week until COVID hit. When COVID hit, I got laid off, furloughed right away, and Narcotics Anonymous stepped up and created this whole, you know, thing with the online meeting forum, and, like, my attendance skyrocketed again. And I don't mean this in a crass way whatsoever, but COVID saved my life. Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. COVID was the fork in the road that gave me an opportunity to come back into Narcotics Anonymous on a regular. Like, I was going again to, like, 4 meetings a day, and I haven't let go since. And in COVID, like, you know, the being able to rekindle relationships with people in San Diego who I hadn't been to meetings with in a long time. And it also helped me, like, build relationships with people in Massachusetts, because we moved out here in 2018, like, December of 2018, just coming up on 6 years being out here. And, like, I didn't really know a lot of people. I was going to a Sunday morning meeting in Newton, like, and that was it. And I didn't really know anybody else. And so so I'm very grateful for the action that Narcotics Anonymous took in that time frame, because that did absolutely help save my life. And it put me back on solid ground in recovery, which was hugely important, because, like, what ended up happening outside of COVID is, like, as a result of COVID is, like, you know, my career changed. I now have a better position in work and stuff, and we were able to save up some money. And in January of last year, of 23, we put an offer on a house. And I'll tell you, I've been homeless 8 years as an adult. And to go from there to then putting an offer on a house was, like, one of the biggest things that I could. I was on such a fucking high, and I was so, like, I still don't believe it today. Like, I have to pinch myself to think that, like, you know, I'm a homeowner. It was amazing. And then the next day at noon, I was in the noon meeting, and I got a call from my dad and found out that my 21-year-old son had died in a motorcycle accident. it was because of Narcotics Anonymous that I was able to, you know, walk through that time in those days. I don't have the tools to process something like that on my own. I don't have that ability. And so I immediately reached out. I reached out on Facebook to friends, and I said, I need help. We had just tied up all of our fucking money, dude. I needed to get to New Mexico. My son was living in New Mexico with my sister. And so I had to get out to New Mexico for services. And his mom lived in San Diego. She's now been clean in the Oz for 7 or 8 years. Maybe 9 years now. But her and her whole crew had to come out from San Diego, and Narcotics Anonymous stepped up in a way through social media and like really helped financially get us in a place where like we could actually, I could go and do this. And so I got on the next flight out to New Mexico, and I looked up online meetings in this little 30,000 person town in the middle of nowhere in the Four Corners area in New Mexico called Farmington. And it turned out that they had a clubhouse where there was daily meetings, and in this clubhouse there was a noon meeting every single day where they read the Just for Today. And the meeting that I go to the most often these days is a noon meeting called Nerna Nooner, which is an online meeting. It's noon Eastern time, Monday through Friday, and so the fact that they had like a similar formatted meeting was huge to me, and I knew that I had to go to this meeting. So I got there like 11 p.m., on Sunday night, my sister picked me up. We went up to Farmington, and the next day was the viewing. And so I went to, I knew I had to go to the meeting. The viewing wasn't until the afternoon. I knew that I had to go to the meeting. I knew that Narcotics Anonymous was full of people who have experienced everything that we've experienced, that know about the love and compassion that we need. And I went to this meeting, and there was people, New Mexico is an open carry state, and there was people with these, they went to the meeting with these fucking guns and knives and like had tattoos all over their faces, and it was not what I was anticipating. And I felt like intimidated and scared. But I went and sat at the center table, like the center of the room at the table, and halfway through the meeting, I shared about what was going on, and I shared that my son had just died, and that that it was going to be the hardest day of my life, and I didn't know how to get through it. And this meeting full of people I had never met, full of people in Narcotics Anonymous who were recovering addicts, they stopped the meeting, and they surrounded me with love, and they gave me a hug, and they told me I didn't have to use again no matter what. The love that I received from them in that meeting was the same love. It was the same love that I received when I came back. When I came back to Hoodlum's Haven on that Friday night of January 26th, and I shared that I didn't know how to fucking stay clean. It was the love that we receive in Narcotics Anonymous if we're open to it. And it carried me through. And 3 hours later, I was at the viewing, and I was in the room with my son privately. And the speaker last night, she shared about holding his hands to his dad's chest and saying that he didn't have anything to apologize for. And there I was, looking at my dead son, apologizing. That's all I could do. I told him I loved him and I apologized. Told him I was sorry, and I said it again and again, and he didn't say it was okay because he was dead. So I've left out a little bit. We had a bit of an estranged relationship, as I'm sure you guys can imagine. And, you know, it happens, and a lot of us get here, don't have the best relationships with people, you know, our loved ones. After Lindsay and I got married, he moved with my sister, and he didn't really want to have anything to do with me whatsoever. And I had told him, like, you know, when you're ready, let me know. So he died on January 10th of 23. On Christmas Day of 22, he was staying at my sister's house, and he wrote a letter of kind of a script that he wanted to read on a phone call to me, explaining that he was one of us, and he didn't know what to do, and he felt like the only person that could understand was me, and he wanted to be a part of my life. My sister kept that letter and that script, and I didn't read it till I got home. But in Narcotics Anonymous, I was taught that, like, you know, if I need to be a father to somebody who's not ready to be my son, then I need to create a life that's acceptable for him to be a part of when he's ready. And I take solace in the fact that the day before he died, we closed on a house that he could have fucking... My office right now is a second bedroom he could have lived in. And the household that we've created is a household of love, and it's a household based on spiritual principles. And I don't think it would have been easy. I think it would have been real fucking hard. But I can't tell you how much I would prefer for that to be the case than what it is now. And it doesn't fucking matter what my preference is, because it is what it is. And the thing is that, like, today, I don't have to use no matter what. There's not a situation or circumstance that's going to come up in my life that where it's going to be made better by me seeking drugs and alcohol as a solution to my problem. Because drugs and alcohol are not a solution to my problem. They're a way to quell the symptoms of my disease that tells me that I'm not enough. And the thing is that today, with the help of Narcotics Anonymous, I know that I was enough, that I am enough, and that I could have been enough for my son. And one of the ways that I know that is that I have another son. He's going to be 18 in May, but he's playing guitar. He's definitely one of us. I don't think he's ever used drugs. But we got him a guitar like 5 years ago, and he hasn't put the thing down ever since. And now he has like 9 guitars and a fucking bass and all sorts of other musical instruments. And all he does every day is play guitar. And, like, I get it, and that's awesome. I'd much rather have him play guitar than fucking do, you know, than become like one of us. If that's where he puts his passion and that's where he finds his value, like, you know what, good. Because I know his behavior, man. And you know what? And he loves me so much. He loves coming out. He loves it when I go out there and we spend time together. I wish we were closer. That might happen. And if it does, I'm ready. And I'm not ready because I was born ready. And I'm not ready because my parents taught me how to be ready, which my parents didn't really fuck me up. Like, they did, but, like, I was already fucked to begin with. Like, they just added on their own personal kind of fucking baggage. I have faith in the fact that, like, that, thank you, that my relationship with my other son is an example of what could have been with Jake. But that's not the only kind of loss and illness that we deal with in Narcotics Anonymous. My brother, the last time I saw him was in December of 2011, a month before I got clean. We ended up being homeless together again in San Diego. And I thought he was dead. I didn't, you know, because I've looked for him. I've hired private investigators. I've gone looking for him in the homeless camps where we used to live. Like, can't find him. Turns out, a little over a year ago, he was arrested in Bozeman, Montana, for stabbing somebody. And they let him go on his own recognizance. I don't fucking understand, dude. Of course he's going to skip town. Like, I would have... Oh, my God. It would be so much better if he was in jail right now, if he was in prison, because at least I would know where he is. So you know, it is the loss for me has been huge. But on the flip side of it, I've gained so much. I have a relationship with Joe. I have a relationship with my wife. I have a relationship with my mom and dad. I absolutely cherish those relationships. I have a relationship with people in Narcotics Anonymous who have taught me how to be a better version of myself. if you would ask me what I wanted when I got clean, I actually wrote a list. It was like, get a job, maybe get a car. But like, I would have sold myself so short, and I had no idea how short I would have sold myself. So I am at time. I am thoroughly grateful to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful to you guys for being here today and participating in your recovery. And that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing.
Ed.
All right, now we have Ed. Please welcome Ed.
I'm an addict. My name's Ed. I have a lot of gratitude right this minute from the message I just heard. I always have to say that when people talk about a relapse, because I haven't done that yet. Knock on wood. Hopefully it won't. I've been clean since 1989, and in that amount of time, I've never been in a meeting where someone talked about coming back from relapse having enjoyed it. Yeah. So I always have to say thank you when anybody does that, because it keeps me clean. Because I do believe it. I remember where I was when I got clean. It was bad. I didn't want to live. I didn't want to feel anything. I didn't want good feelings, bad feelings, none of it. Just numb. That's all I wanted. And it stopped working. I couldn't get numb anymore. All I could do was feel, and I fucking hated it. And I started, playing chicken with trees. And, you drive fast at them, and then you swerve at the last second, get your heart pumping. Because it made me feel something that I could, say I did that, because all the other stuff I was feeling, I had no control over. And one thing led to another. I had a pretty traumatic experience that got me to the point of realizing I had a problem. I didn't know I had a problem before then. I just thought that I sucked at life. Drugs weren't working, so I thought I was doing something wrong. I needed to learn how to use drugs, differently or something, because they weren't working anymore. It was something that was wrong with me. And lo and behold, that's the truth, but not the way I thought. So I went to therapy. Therapy led me to, they sent me to a substance abuse group, and that group sent me to another fellowship where they talk about being powerless over one substance, and I was not powerless over that substance, having quit it on my own 3 or 4 years before I got there, because I had a lot of other things to take its place, and I talked about that there, this doesn't make sense. What do you mean? I could hold that in my hand and not use it. How are you powerless over this? They couldn't. I made a bunch of lies. Miserable there for a little bit. And then finally, an old timer in that fellowship sat me down and said, look, because I was pretty vocal about it, because I was mad. Why does this make sense to you and not to me? This is working. I like what you're selling here, but your method isn't making sense to me. And he said, get these guys here, NA, as opposed to this A. Why don't you go check them out? And he was nice about it, and I did. I'd never heard of NA before, because you really had to do some traveling to get to a meeting back then. But the A that I went to, they were all over the place. So my first NA meeting, and I was home. I knew it. People that said the things I was thinking. Nobody talked about a particular thing that they were powerless over besides the disease of addiction. And then things started to click, And they were happy to see me, and they told me to come back. And, nobody had a problem with anything that I shared. I wasn't used to that yet, I'd been challenged on a lot of the stuff that I'd said in the other fellowship. I respect that today. Back then, I had horrible things to say about it. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't exist. So... And if it weren't for them, I wouldn't exist. So I got clean there. But I'm really glad that the previous speaker talked a lot about loss, because I'm here to talk about illness. And I've found that there's a lot of, they're really interwoven. They go together really well. I'm currently in my 7th month of being ill, hence the cane. In April of this year, I got a viral infection, and then I haven't been back to work since. Mm-hmm. The virus is gone. I've tested for so many things, and they can't find an answer, and they can't find an answer. And all this time, you know, my brain is thinking, well, you know, I'm just sick. I'm going to go back to work. You know, I brought myself up from being, you know, almost unemployable. I kept a job. How I did that, I don't really know. But, you know, I came into recovery. And that's one of the things that made it difficult for me to understand was that I didn't lose my job. I didn't lose my home. I didn't lose, my relationships were fine. Nobody knew I had a problem. They also didn't know me. Mm. They knew what I was showing them. And I've met people since I've gotten clean, and I tell them I'm clean. I'm like, what? You got a problem? Oh boy, if you only knew. And I mentioned getting suicidal because that's when I got to my 2nd month of being sick and no answers, and coming to grips with the fact that this might be as good as it gets for the rest of my life, I got suicidal, like that. It was bad. I'm a combat vet. I have PTSD from that. I have a lot of guns. And I almost wasn't here anymore, but I ended up where I needed to be. And we made a safety plan, and we changed my meds around, and my guns are all locked up. You know, I'm safe from myself. Without NA, I could not have done that. Without NA, I would not have the ability to be that honest about myself. Before I got here, what I learned was, if I tell you the truth, you can hurt me, and you will. That was my experience, starting from when I was a little kid, my parents, you know, the spankings and all that and stuff. and I worked this program for the rest of my life, hopefully. And I don't expect to be free of the reasons that I have to work a program to be able to live, you know. When I first got clean, I used to think that I was going to get better. And I had sort of an idea of what better looked like, but it was kind of vague, and I've had to let it go. You know, that third step, man. Once I understood what needed to happen, you know, I attacked that first third step. I put my whole heart and soul into it, and I've been able to lean back on that. You know, I did a ritual. I burned like incense, and you know, I just. Anything that I could think of that would give it meaning, that would entrench it in my brain, that I would remember the power of the ritual that I created, because I had to have one. I had a ritual before I got here. Probably a lot of you are familiar with it, you know? And I had to replace that. I didn't know that. It's not what I thought when I went and did my third step, but that's what I had to do, and I look back on that. It was a powerful ritual for me, personal, private, just me and God. And I did that, and it involved, you know, crying and just being in the twilight zone for a while, just me and my higher power, you know, just in this place that I tried to get to for so long with drugs, and all I got was the illusion of that. First time I did the third step, I got what I'd always been looking for with drugs. I've gotten so high in recovery. The longer I stay clean, the higher I can get. Meditation, interactions with people, you know, the power, that the energy that I feel in this room right now is almost unbearable. And I love it. I love it. You guys are filling me up right now, and I need that. I've been almost 7 months on the couch. I can't walk. I have shortness of breath and dizzy spells and all these things, you know. It's sometimes I, you know, have to stop halfway from my couch to the kitchen which is like maybe 15 feet, and stop and hold myself and catch my breath again. Wait until I can function. And, you know, I'm 7 months in, so I'm pretty well versed in it now. But those first couple of months were rough. I wake up in the morning, I feel okay, you know? In the beginning, I was like, oh, shit, okay, I'm done. You know, I feel better, you know, a couple of days, so I go back to work. And an hour later, I get about an hour in the morning. It's the weirdest thing. I get my dishes done, balance my checkbook, get my laundry done, stuff like that. And after that, I can't count on being able to function. I don't make any decisions. I try not to do math, you know. It's fucking YouTube. And, you know, from someone who never really watched the news, I didn't watch the TV for years and years and years because it was poisoning my brain. I couldn't be positive. I was always focused on what was wrong. And since I stopped watching TV, that doesn't happen as often. So that's kind of cool. But I built myself a life in NA with you guys' help by becoming vulnerable, by sitting in a meeting of NA, my home group or not, and getting honest and throwing my emotions out, the stuff that's going on that's making me feel like using, the stuff that's going on that makes me not want to be around anymore. You know, because what's the point of doing all this work to get clean and stay clean if I'm not going to enjoy my life? I work in mental health. I've always worked in group homes, and I'm really good at it. I'm not blowing my own horn. Well, I guess I am. But, you know, so I started with the company I worked for in 2000. I went full-time with them. And I never got a degree. And I'm doing, I was, 8 months ago, I was running a group home. And I've been doing that for almost 2 years. It would have been 2 years in September. And I loved it. So good at it. I know how to schedule things. I know what behavior plans and the stuff and how to teach people, how to work with people. And a gentle way of pointing out a ways that somebody could improve their interactions with clients. And it just, I was so passionate about it. And I just, this is it. Okay, I found my niche. I'm 61. I'll work until I'm 67. I'll retire. And so I had it all figured out. And I got sick. And I'm at a point thinking, what's the point of all this? I lost what I had. And I wanted, I had equated my career with success as a person. And I have come to an understanding since then, a reminder that I have value as a person even without a career. So far I've been taken care of. The benefits from work, I've been able to continue to eat and, all that kind of stuff. But being here, this is an act of my higher power. Silas asked me to speak. He's the chairperson of the convention committee. Thank God for those guys. Asked me to do this, 6 months ago. And I said, yeah, I will if I can, because then I didn't know. I thought he asked me earlier than that, but no, I'm remembering now. I was talking to somebody about it earlier, and I thought it was a long time before, but it's not. Anyways, and that's really what I meant. I said, yeah, I'll be there if I can. I'm at a point right now in my life, I do not leave my house unless it's a medical appointment. When I go out to eat, I haven't been in a grocery store in 6 months. I don't drive. I missed the whole season of riding my bike. And so that, my world has gotten so small. My life is my couch. Couch, TV, pet the cat. Go to the bathroom, make some food, couch. That's it. And sometimes I can't even do that. So I get to feeling like it's not fair. You know, part of the problem with watching YouTube is I'm watching people do stuff that I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know? And sometimes I'm able to do it vicariously through them, which is really awesome. And sometimes I'm sitting there just motherfucking them. Like, ah, can't believe you could do that and I can't. And I got to be honest about that. I'd like to not have to say that about myself. I wish that I could say I'm a more spiritual person in how I deal with this. But you know what? This fucking sucks. And I can't afford to put on a good face for it. I'll die. I can't be fake anymore. Everything that I do now, in this moment today, is an energy expenditure. I have a ledger. I have a checking account of energy that I write checks for every day. Get up out of bed, take a shower. Oh, not enough energy today. You know, I have to have a really good reason to take a shower. Otherwise, it's a sponge bath or sometimes nothing at all. What can I do? What do I have to do? I have a list, you know, appointments. Like the calendar on my phone saves my life. I plan my life out as far ahead in advance as I possibly can. And I never used to do that, like, so consciously, you know. I would do things, but it was like, this is what I always do, you know. If I needed food, I'd just stop by the grocery store on the way home from work. Didn't pay attention to how much I spent, because I knew, unless I go crazy and spend $1,000 at the grocery store, I'm probably going to be able to handle it, you know, making the most money I've ever made in my life. And that's all changed. Now I have to order groceries on the app. And I have a woman who comes and cleans my house on Saturdays because I can't fucking clean my own house. She picks up my groceries on the way in. She's pretty cool. I pay her. And yeah, sometimes I don't see the point of this existence. I really don't. You know, I've been suicidal twice since this all came about. And I got help with it. And, you know, one of the things that brings me back from that edge is thinking about how many people it would hurt if I did this. Because the people who successfully commit suicide are at the point, from what I know from working in human services, they've reached the point where they don't think anybody cares. They don't think it's going to really hurt anybody, you know? And I'm NA will not let me believe that. There's a lot of people that it would hurt if I ended my life that way. And I don't want that. I don't want the sum total of my life, the energy that I put into being who I am, to come to an end that way. I just don't. But it sucks living this life too, you know? I have to figure out how to find a purpose. And I got a piece of that today, actually. And this is hitting me as I'm talking, so it's really kind of cool. A sponsee gave me a ride up here. And on the ride up, you know, it's a sponsor and a sponsee having a talk. Well, that's one of the things that makes me have value as a person. That I sponsored, that someone trusts me, someone respects my recovery enough that they want my input on their life. They're willing to share the nitty-gritty, the nasty stuff that's making them want to use. And I'm able to help them, and how important that is, and how I can't get that anywhere else. You know, I am a combat vet. I ride a motorcycle. There's a group called the Combat Vets Motorcycle Association, and I ride with them, and there's some crazy motherfuckers, and I get a lot of brotherhood and fellowship from them that's also helped me stay alive. But they hit on different places. You know, they hit on the place that I went to when I was in combat that I still suffer from, you know, and NA goes to what I used to deal with that. It's different. And I need both of them. Again, it gets back to that third step. It always comes back to the third step for me. Because at the end of the day, you know, when I was working, I felt pretty good about Ed. I liked what I did. You know, I felt like, not only was I doing something that was earning me the most money I've ever made, which is not a lot of money, but it's the most I've ever made. I was helping people. I was making a difference in the world, you know? And my whole life since I got clean has been that, working in group homes, you know, sponsoring people, helping people get clean, helping people deal with, you know, all their personal stuff that's making them feel like pieces of shit, and showing them, no, you're not, you know, channeling my higher power through me to help others. Because before I got here, all I did was take, you know, from everybody. And you know, when I made amends to people, I surprised a few people with the stuff I had to say. But I felt a lot better about Ed after I did that. It wasn't a secret I was carrying around with me anymore. You know, and a couple of those relationships, they kind of fizzled out. But I'd rather have a relationship fizzle out from the truth than to be going ongoing based on, you know, a falsehood. I've learned so much about integrity. When I see somebody come in, and I've been in meetings where somebody comes in and they could still feel the effects, they could still taste the puke, and they talk about how bad it fucking sucks out there. And I feel that, you know? I watch them and I see, and you know, sometimes they get specific about what they've been using, sometimes they don't. You know, sometimes it's someone that I knew before they went out. How powerful that is. In the face of that, I can't stay in that place. I could go there. I do go there. I don't think I'm going to stop going there because I'm human and life hurts. But I'm not going to use, at least not today. And I haven't yet. And hopefully it won't. Because I don't want to use. Not really. I just don't want to feel. I don't want to be sick. I want that life back that I fucking built, you know? And I can't have that. And what I've learned staying clean, you know, a number of years is that if I hang on, it'll work itself out somehow. I'll find something productive that I could do with my life, or I'll regain the ability to do what I was doing. I don't know the future. I know today, when I get home, it's going to be me on the couch, and that's going to be it. And that's all I'm going to be capable of doing. And to me, coming here to do this is a price worth paying to me, as far as I'm concerned. I need this. This helps me. You know, hopefully what I'm saying is helping somebody in the room, but doing this is helping me. This energy exchange that we're all having right now, this is important for me. I need this. I can feel this when I'm not in the room. You know, I realize that when I'm home by myself and the cat is sick of my shit, you know, I could still feel the connection that I have to the people in recovery. It's weird, you know, it gets on that metaphysical kind of stuff. But yeah, I love it. Call it magic, call it whatever the hell you want. I discovered it here, and I haven't discovered it anywhere else. You know, they say take it with you, and I have. And yeah, I'm really glad that people showed up, not just for this meeting, but for this convention. You know, I was on the convention committee for 8 years, and this is my first year not being on it. And I'm really grateful because the shit hit the fan with the convention committee. So I don't know the whole story yet, but I know it's a miracle that this thing is going on. So, you know, thank you all for showing up. I appreciate you. Thanks.